charging the light up. Yeah, but the I took the Dahlia's pretty good too. Recommended by the cook. I didn't have it at any time all day. I took it just for babies and sick old men. So, what do you want to start? A new tape or something? Or just gonna... Okay, but I'm not sure if that's what it is. You read about Putin and his nice flavor. I guess we'll just start with chapter 7. This is okay. Where's my little table you're going to bring? I used to get my little table. You know, so the pure devotees always serve Krishna with great love and affection. For Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul of every living entity. It is concluded, therefore, that even a little energy expended in the service of the Lord gives one immense transcendental profit. This is explained in the Bhagavad Gita, Svapamapya Siddhanamapya. Devotional service and Krishna consciousness is so sublime that even a little service to Krishna, knowingly or unknowingly, gives one the greatest benefit. The system of worshipping Krishna by offering flowers from a tree is also beneficial for the living entity who is confined to the bodily existence of the tree, of that tree. When the flowers and fruits are offered to Krishna, the tree that bore them also receives much benefit. Indirectly. I think we read all that. Okay. We'll start with chapter 7. Salvation of Srinivasa. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is always full of six opulences. Sad Aishvarya Purna. Namely, complete wealth, Aishvaryasya Samagrasya, Viryasya Yashashasriya. Complete wealth, complete strength, complete fame, complete knowledge, complete beauty, and complete renunciation. The Lord appears in different, complete, eternal forms of incarnation. The conditioned soul has immense opportunity to hear about the transcendental activities of the Lord in these different incarnations. In the Bhagavad Gita it is said, Janma Karma Chame Divyam. The pastimes and activities of the Lord are not material. They are beyond the material conception. But the conditioned soul can benefit by hearing such uncommon activities. Hearing is an opportunity to associate with the Lord. Nice. Hearing is an opportunity. You want to associate with God. What does God do? Or what is it you can just hear about and read his pastimes? He actually can associate with the Lord. To hear his activities is to evolve to the transcendental nature simply by hearing. The conditioned soul has a natural aptitude to hear something about other conditioned souls in the form of fiction, drama, and novel. That inclination to hear something about others may be utilized in hearing the pastimes of the Lord. Then one can immediately evolve to his transcendental nature. Krishna's pastimes are not only beautiful, but they are also very pleasing to the mind. If someone takes advantage of hearing the pastimes of the Lord, the material contamination of dust accumulated in the heart due to long association with material nature can be immediately cleansed. Lord Chaitanya also instructed that simply by hearing the transcendental name of Lord Krishna, one can cleanse the heart of all material contamination. Right? There are different processes for self-realization, but this process of devotional service, of which hearing is the most important function, when adopted by any conditioned soul, will automatically cleanse him of the material contamination and enable him to realize his real constitutional position. Conditional life is due to this contamination only, and as soon as it is cleared off, then naturally the dormant function of the living entity, namely, rendering service to the Lord, awakened. By developing his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, one becomes eligible to create friendship with the devotees. Very many, there's a lot can be said. There's so many things here in Prabhupada's purport. Could, but never. I don't really want to hear Prabhupada. But what he's saying is that he's talking about how one becomes eligible to enter the family of Krishna. For example, it may be a very rich person, like, say, Market Lal or Hinduja or something. But if you go to school, you're in England in private school, and maybe their son is sent to England to private school, and then you meet him, you're both on the soccer team, and you're playing on the same team, and you become friends. And then that friend says, oh, I'm going back home to Bombay for Christmas vacation, why don't you come with me? So then you come, and you're just someone ordinary, not very wealthy person, but you're in the same school somehow. Became friends, and then he takes you home, and then he introduces you to his father, and pretty soon you become known to the whole family. So, but your first relationship was just with one member of the family. So Prabhupada's saying here that our friendship, that developing his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, one becomes eligible to create friendship with the devotees. So when we actually awaken our original nature, which is to serve not our bodies or our connections in this world, but to serve the Lord, then we come into contact with Krishna's family, of other servants of the Lord. His family, Krishna's family, are all serving him. Just like in a family, everyone's serving the wife is serving the husband, the children are serving the husband. Traditionally, he's like the head of the household, so to speak. But Krishna's the head of the family of devotees. And so when you see, like when you're living outside, and you start to approach Krishna approach Krishna, become a devotee, and then when you move into a society, say ISKCON, then you have a huge family, and everyone knows you all around the world, and you go somewhere, oh, you're so-and-so, oh, this guy, I've heard about you, you become eligible to make friendship with all the devotees. Because devotees, they have expression in English, birds of a feather flock together. And you see that when you go to Radhabad, there's some place here which they call Radhabad, up the Mars, where they first see the birds every evening around 5 o'clock, and they say that they don't know where the food comes from, but every day there's several hundred kilos of grains come over there. You ever went there? I told
no,
about
I just
it.
Heard it came from, he did Kasi and then Kudakshapur in the end to Kasi with the first.
Yeah, and then he took me there.
Right.
Yeah, we went there and he actually took me one time, we can also go. And when you see all the birds there, all the pigeons are all together and all the parrots are together, it's just a circle of green and a big circle of grey, and then peacocks kind of move around and among everybody, they step over everybody. It's so big. But they tend to wait a little bit later because they don't like all the hustle and bustle of the lower class. The lower class, they like to eat it, dine in a certain elegance. a certain kind of elegance. So, but the idea is that they all stay together. So when by developing this eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, we become eligible to create friendship with devotees. Because that's one of the qualities, that's one of the behavioral patterns of devotees, is that they make friends with other devotees. And they avoid, who do they avoid? The non-devotees. Asat Sangha Tyaga E Vaishnavachara. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that one should avoid the achara, the behavior of Vaishnavas, that he avoids the avaishnavas. I mean, if he approaches them simply to convert them or to awaken them to the family of Krishna. But he doesn't go to associate with them or take their association. Asat Sangha Tyag of Vaishnavachar. So we renounce or we give up the association of the asat, the temporary, the non-devotee, the persons against the Lord. So then we go towards Krishna, then we have this whole friendship with all the devotees. By developing his eternal relationship, Maharaj Pariksit recommended from practical experience that everyone tried to hear about the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. This Krishna treatise is meant for that purpose, and a reader may take advantage of it to attain the ultimate goal of life. Pariksit Maharaj, when he was hearing Bhagavatam for the last 7 days of his life, he didn't eat or drink anything. He didn't eat any food or drink any water. And when the sages were there, they all gathered around and said, Pariksit, you want some water? And he said, why? There is no need for food or drink. I'm drinking with the with the mouth of my ears, I'm drinking this nectar and rust of Krishna's pastimes, and I want to go on and on and on, because this is the immortal nectar that will not only satisfy the soul and satisfy the heart, but will give me all perfection and liberate me from this world. What need is there for any food or drink when I can drink the nectarine topics of Srimad Bhagavatam? He didn't sleep, he didn't eat, he didn't drink for 7 days. Just heard the Bhagavatam. So such attachment and that's the Bhagavatam. The Lord, out of his causeless mercy, descends on this material world and displays his activities just like an ordinary man. Unfortunately, the impersonalist or the atheistic class of men consider Krishna to be an ordinary man like themselves, so they deride him. It's right out of the Bhagavad Gita, that whole sentence the Prabhupada mentions. It's right out of the Bhagavad Gita, not Mandis, Vishinamuna, Prabhupada. You know, those fools, they consider that when I take human form, that I'm just, when I descend in this world, I'm just a normal, ordinary human being. And then he quotes. This is condemned in the Bhagavad Gita by the Lord himself when he says, Avajananti ma mudha. The mudhas, or the rascals, there we go again, they take Krishna to be an ordinary man or a slightly more powerful man. Out of their great misfortune, they cannot accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes, such unfortunate persons misrepresent themselves as incarnations of Krishna, without referring to the authorized scriptures. When Krishna grew up a little more, he began to turn himself backside up. Backside up. In other words, we heard so far, this is chapter 7, the salvation of Srinavarta. This is the second demon that Krishna killed. And we already heard that he killed Putana after when he was 6 days old. Some people say 3 months, but it's also the Acharyas say he was 6 days old. When he was 6 days old, he killed Putana, who came as a nursemaid, and then liberated her, gave her Dashi Mukti. She became liberated to take the position of mother. And so he was just, babies, they just lie on their backside down, and kick their legs up. Right? So you don't know? You never were a baby? Well, that's what they do, the little kids, when they're babies. They lie on their back, and their legs go like that. Then they can't, like a little bug. You ever see a bug? Like a cockroach gets flipped on his back, and he just kicks his legs. So a baby's like a little cockroach. He just kicks his legs, and he's helpless, and he can't flip over. But then, when he gets a little strong, he rolls over. Then his backside is up instead of down. So it said he began to turn himself backside up. It means he's lying on his belly now. That means he's getting ready to move. First, he's just lying on his back, watching the world go by and making noise and pooping. And then after some time, after about a month or two, then he gets rolling over on his stomach, and then he's getting ready to move. He's all now. Now I'm ready to check the world out. We were like that, backside up and backside down. Everyone was. But after some time, we started walking. It says here, the Acharyas say that when Krishna turned himself backside up, he did not merely lie down on his back. And the Acharyas say this occurred at the completion of Krishna's third month, when he began his fourth month, and there's a traditional bathing that's given amidst great festivities. So Krishna was born in Shravan Mas. That was like August. then September, October, November. Sometime around December, beginning of December, Krishna turned up soon. Turned out, on his stomach. And this is about the time when he killed the Chinavarta. When we became 2 years old, we ran away from home at the age of two. We were naked, like Shukadeva Goswami. And we got a few kilometers away, and then police picked us up. And they took us to the station, or somewhere, I guess, station, and tried to wait for some mother to call. Call, say, you find a little baby. And it's so funny, my little friend who was hardly born yet, he said, oh, I remember, he walked through our yard. This is a story that was told in our village about how we ran away at the age of two. So we weren't too much into family life. Took sannyasa at the age of two. And then we were called back and some Maya for some time. Another function was observed by Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, Krishna's first birthday. They arranged for Krishna's birthday ceremony, which is still followed by all followers of Vedic principles. This is strictly observed in India by all Hindus, irrespective of different sectarian views. All the colored men and women were invited to participate, and they arrived in jubilation. I color my hair still?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Just gray color. I can't get that out. I tried, didn't go out. A nice band played, and the people assembled enjoyed it. All the learned brahmanas were invited, and they chanted Vedic hymns for the good fortune of Krishna. Swasti, swasti, om Krishna, swasti. During the chanting of the Vedic hymns and the playing of the band, Krishna was bathed by Mother Yashoda. This bathing ceremony is technically called Abhishek, and even today this is observed in all the temples of Vrindavan, and it's known as the birthday anniversary of Lord Krishna. On this occasion, Mother Yashoda arranged to distribute a large quantity of grains and cows decorated with golden ornaments were made ready to be given in charity to the learned, respectable brahmanas. Yashoda took her bath and dressed herself nicely, and taking child Krishna, duly dressed and bathed, on her lap, she sat down to hear the Vedic hymns chanted by the brahmanas. As soon as I read this, I didn't see the next line. I thought, I tried to see this in my mind, because remember we were saying sometimes when we read, we should try to actually capture this scene. It's just like when you're watching television or something, or it's been a long time. But you're seeing a scene and you're watching and you're entering into it and feeling for the characters and anticipating the next plot and everything and what's going to happen now and what happened before. You're conscious of the whole flow of the thing if you're into it, if it's a good movie or whatever. So what to speak of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, so we should concentrate on the whole flow of the pastimes. So as soon as I was reading this, I was visualizing how Krishna's all so freshly bathed and dressed and looking so sweet, and Mother shows and she sits him on his lap, and these brahmanas start reciting. And knowing the nature of Krishna, how his mood is, I thought, in my mind, before I read the next sentence, I thought, well, probably when Krishna heard those Vedic hymns, he probably fell asleep, because he could care less. That kind of stuff, what a bore. He just started falling asleep. So the next line says, while listening to the chanting of the Vedic hymns, the child appeared to be falling asleep. And therefore, Mother Yashoda very silently laid him down on the bed. Being engaged in receiving all the friends, relatives, and residents of Vrindavan on that holy occasion, she forgot to feed the child milk. He was crying, being hungry, but Mother Yashoda could not hear him because of the various noises. Can you imagine? Poor Krishna. He was crying, he wanted his Mother Yashoda's milk. And then he said, nobody's hearing me. And he said, Mother Yashoda, your son's birthday. Oh, it's so wonderful, your son's so rich. Everyone's coming over to bring gifts and celebrate the first Janmashtami that in the world ever happened. It's the very first Janmashtami. This is what happened, the first Janmashtami. The star of the show, the very star of the show, is being totally neglected, and he's crying in a corner. Imagine it's your birthday party, everyone, and you're in your room, and everyone says, oh, it's great, Jesus' birthday, here's a gift. No, it's a, and everyone's carrying on, meeting each other, haven't seen you in a long time, here's what we bought gifts, yeah, but No one ever thinks, well, what is Isha? Yeah, the person whose birthday it is, like, everyone's so wrapped up in meeting each other and bringing the gifts and the celebrations and the band and the festivities and the incense and everything going on, they don't even take notice of, well where's the star? Where's Krishna anyway? He's off in the corner. Really a funny scene, actually. Couldn't hear him. The child, however, became angry because he was hungry and his mother was not paying any attention to him. So he lifted his legs and began to kick his lotus feet just like an ordinary child. But baby Krishna had been placed underneath a hand-driven cart. And while he was kicking his legs, he accidentally touched the wheel of the cart and it collapsed. Can you imagine the heavy wagons like you see, the carts, the bullock carts, and you know, some little kid be lying in the back and just kick the wheel and poof. And, you know, anyone could do that. It's impossible. He accidentally touched the wheel of the cart and it collapsed. Various kinds of utensils and brass and metal dishes had been piled up on the hand cart, and they all fell down with a great noise. The wheel of the cart separated from the axle, and the spokes of the wheel were all broken and scattered hither and thither. It's like incredible destruction, little baby poop, and spokes flying everywhere. Mother Yashoda and all the gopis, as well as Maharaj Nanda, and all the coward men were astonished as to how the cart could have collapsed by itself. All the men and women who were assembled for that holy function crowded around and began to suggest how the cart might have collapsed. I think it went much faster. No one could ascertain the cause, but some small children who were entrusted to play with baby Krishna informed the crowd that it was due to Krishna striking his feet against the wheel. They assured the crowd that they had seen how it had happened with their own eyes, and they strongly asserted the point. We saw it! This is what happened! Believe me, little Krishna kicked his legs and... Oh, you kids, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. You little kids, you don't understand. It's not possible. Big cart, heavy, big wheel, axle. It's oak, you know, wheels are not made out of, you know, balsa wood or some kind of pine wood or something. They're made of heavy oak and heavy lakkri, and, you know, they call it sesam or some hard wood. Hard wood. And it's not easy to break. You practically can't even cut a hole in the wood, so hard. Very dense and concentrated wood. Krishna smashed it up like it was just some kind of little, you know, paper or something. Some were listening to the statement of the small children, but others said, how can you believe the statements of these children? The coward men and women could not understand that the all-powerful personality of Godhead was lying there as a baby, and that he could do anything. Both the possible and impossible were within his power. While the discussion was going on, baby Krishna cried. Without remonstration, Mother Yashoda picked the child up on her lap and called the learned brahmanas to chant holy Vedic hymns to counteract the evil spirits. At the same time, she allowed the baby to suck her breast. If a child sucks the mother's breast nicely, it is to be understood that he is out of all danger. After this, all the stronger coward men put their broken cart back together, and all the scattered things were set up nicely as before. The brahmanas thereafter began to offer oblations to the sacrificial fire with yogurt, butter, kusha grass, and water. They worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the good fortune of the child. The brahmanas who were present at that time were all qualified because they were not envious. So it indicates you can go another way around with that. You can say if you want to be a qualified brahmana, you have to be non-envious, right? So that's very rare in Kali Yuga, so it's envious there. Envy means desire, basically. Envy is another form of desire. In other words, when someone's envious of someone, they want what they have. That means it's desire, want, desire. And Brahmanas in Kali Yuga, they want your money. So they're actually envious. And that's expressed by their intense attachment and desire for money. That's not always the case. Previously, Brahmanas are Atmaram, they're self-satisfied. Because they have Krishna, they have their relationship, they're Brahmanas. So this is the actual qualification. They're qualified, not envious. They never indulged in untruthfulness. They were never proud. They were non-violent, and they never claimed any false prestige. They were all bona fide brahmanas, and there was no reason to think that their blessing would be useless. In other words, people give blessings, try to give blessings in Kali Yuga, Ashavad or Ashavad, but they're useless unless one actually has all these qualities. Because these qualities are divine. And when one exhibits divine qualities, that means he's connected with divinity. He's connected with the Absolute Truth, who is the source of all power and all ability to benefit or bless or curse or whatever. So these are not easy qualities to have. But if one has these qualities, which are the qualities of the Absolute Truth, then he's actually a suitable candidate to receive the flow of power coming from the Absolute Truth. And then he can bless or benefit someone. But in Kali Yuga, we don't find too many individuals like this. Non-envious, never indulged in untruthfulness, never proud, non-violent, never claimed any false prestige. So their blessings, they'll definitely be useful. With firm faith in the qualified brahmanas, Nanda Maharaj took his child on his lap and bathed him with water mixed with various herbs, while the brahmanas chanted hymns from the Rig, Yajur, and Samaveda. It is said that without being a qualified brahmana, one should not read the mantras of the Vedas. Here is the proof that the brahmanas were qualified with all the brahminical symptoms. Maharaj Nanda also had full faith in them. Therefore, they were allowed to perform the ritualistic ceremonies by chanting the Vedic mantras. There are many different varieties of sacrifices recommended for different purposes, but the mantras are all to be chanted by qualified brahmanas. And because in the age of Kali, such qualified brahmanas are not available, all Vedic ritualistic sacrifices are therefore forbidden. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore recommended only one kind of sacrifice in this age, namely Sankirtan Yajna, or simply the chanting of the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. The brahmanas chanted the Vedic hymns and performed the ritualistic ceremonies for the second time. Nanda Maharaj again gave huge quantities of grains and many cows to them. All the cows which were given in charity were covered with nice gold embroidered garments, and their horns were bedecked with golden rings. And there's rings around the horns. That keeps them from cracking also. You know, when you make a flute or something, you put some string around the different sections, you put strings so the number doesn't crack. It gives strength to the horns also, and great beauty. You know, different rings. You know, bands like in gold, different diameters. It's beautiful. And their hooves were covered with silver plate, and they wore garlands of flowers. Imagine their hooves were silver plated. And they had gold bands around their horns, and beautiful embroidered cloth on their backs, like some kind of special dress horse or something. Or, you know, kind of, they had these horses with special blankets on them and things. He gave so many nice cows just for the welfare of his wonderful child. And the brahmanas in return bestowed their heartfelt blessings. And the blessings offered by the able brahmanas and the blessings offered by the able or qualified brahmanas were never to be baffled. They would never be lost or defeated. So, Shakatasura. This little thing here about Shakatasura. There's the Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, right? The two demons in the beginning of the universe in Satyuga. So Hiranyaksha had a son named Utkacha. And he went to the ashram of Lomasharishi, great sage Lomasharishi, and he just started destroying all the trees. So, Lomasharishi, he cursed him, Utkacha, to become disembodied. In other words, he would become a ghost. He lost his body. So then he prayed, Utkacha said, please, can't you reduce that curse or pardon me somehow? And Lomasharishi said, well, you will appear in Dwapara Yuga and you'll be liberated by the lotus feet of Lord Krishna and Braja. So then what happened is this demon named Utkacha, he entered into that cart and then he was freed by a Krishna's kick. So the Lord is not only expressing his anger at being neglected and not receiving milk to appease his hunger, but as Krishna often does, he accomplishes many things with one activity. He definitely let everybody know he was angry and wanted some milk to drink, and sent a very clear message to Mother Yashoda. But simultaneously, he also liberated his demon, Utkacha, who was, of course, very fortunate to be liberated by the kick of Krishna. We should also pray for the kick of Krishna. It's a very nice painting. There's this demon here. Have you seen it before?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it was a finger like this,
completely. Yeah, like,
innocent.
Yeah, me, I didn't do anything. That's why the people, they can't believe. How is it possible? This little boy with a finger in his mouth and saliva dripping down his lips and, you know, gurgling and burbling and everything they do. How is it possible that he just messed with these carpet pieces? The baller and the boys are saying, we saw it. It's true. Nice. Now, at two down and a few more to go, Krishna killed that one. First one, who was the first demon Krishna killed? Pushana. Who's the second one? What's his name? Shakat. Yeah, Shakat means card, rather than now. Shakat. S-A-K-A-T, Shakat. Now we'll read about the third one. Shakat. I don't know if Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains anything about Shakat or not. Oh, he does, yeah, of course, must be something. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains that this Shakat Asura, he represents the smashing of old and new bad habits, lethargy and vanity, load bearing arising from old and new bad habits. We talked about that once. It's prema varukshu, those that are actually progressing towards prema, and those that are load-bearing, they're carrying all their old bad habits with them, and even into spiritual life, and they're doggedly attached to them, they refuse to give them up, and even have their old bad habits, like laziness or lethargy or procrastination, putting things off that should be done, they keep putting off. Those are old bad habits, maybe from before they were in spiritual life, and then in spiritual life they build up bad habits, you know, like sleeping during sunrise, or taking rest during Bhagavatam class or something. You know, like they get up from Mangalore Tea and then they chant Japa, but then they fall asleep and miss Bhagavatam class. It becomes like a bad habit. So these are old bad habits that we carry over from previous life, or and then even in spiritual life we develop some bad habits. Sleeping or chanting Japa or different things. So a loaded cart represents a person carrying the lumber of scriptural learning that tends to smother the infant Krishna and requires to be smashed with Krishna's help at the very onset if he wants to awaken natural love for Lord Krishna. Lumber means a bunch of wood. So if one has so much scriptural learning, it's just like it's a heavy weight, just carrying a heavy weight of wood. But if he doesn't, that heavy weight can smother the infant Krishna, in other words, Krishna Bhakti. In other words, what he's saying is that too much pursuit of jnana, scriptural knowledge, just studying for the sake of studying and learning for the sake of learning, it will smother the little infant baby Krishna, which is trying to grow within the heart of the soul. And Krishna represents bhakti, the bhakti and jnana. So if it's like a cart that's full of so much, you know, piled up high with wood, and if there's something under that wood, it'll be smothered, it'll be crushed by the weight of all that. So too much knowledge, too much, you know, just scriptural studies and scriptural knowledge can kind of smother the infant Krishna. And that has to be, should be smashed and thrown away, all that excessive attachment to just studying and learning things. At the very onset, in other words, when one sees that tendency beginning, where he just wants to study and learn some of these things, it's like to be removed in the beginning before it. If one wants to develop this natural love for Krishna. sometimes it happens, you know, even in spiritual life, devotees get so much interested in knowledge that they lose the actual essence. They learn this and learn that and learn this and that, but they don't learn anything. They don't really actually learn how to surrender to and love Krishna. Then it says here, it says victims of the bogus guru are liable to fall into this plight. Such victims do not realize the misfortune due to their mechanical aptitude, which is exploited by the bogus guru to their utter ruin. The mechanical mood has no access in Braja. The mechanical means just the rules and regulations. You're saying the mechanical aspect means just, you know, if someone just fills you up with rules and regulations and all kinds of do's and don'ts, and just stresses that more than the actual cultivation of bhakti and the cultivation of prema in the heart. That's like a bogus guru looking at, you know, what he's saying here. You can fall into this plight of accumulating all kinds of, like some gurus will say, well, you must learn Sanskrit, study Sanskrit, and they can divert their disciples. Now, you can't, without learning Sanskrit, you can't do anything. So you spend the next 4 years learning Sanskrit. So he emphasizes the disciples learn Sanskrit, so you spend all their time learning all the Sanskrit, and their whole life goes by, and they never actually perform any bhakti. You know, actually, it's not enough. You're going to be scholars. And so that's actually a bogus guru, because a bogus guru, he'll teach you on the path of prema. And actually, and all the rudiments and all the practices by which one can quickly awaken his love, the love of his heart, the Krishna. That's what Prabhupada did. Prabhupada didn't clutter himself with all kinds of non-essentials. He gave it to his senses. The most essential shastras, the most essential deities, the most essential mantra, and the most essential path. A spiritual life was to very quickly and effortlessly attain the topmost transcendental goal, the pure love for Radha and Krishna. He gave us Radha and Krishna to worship. He gave us the beloved Tulsi to worship. He gave us Srimad Bhagavatam. He gave us insight to make it in Bhakti Vasan and Krishna. He didn't give us a bunch of grammar books and Sanskrit books and all these things. Some gurus do that, and that's the same guy. He probably got right to the essence, and here it is. Took it and delivered it and fed it to us and inspired us by it and tried to bring us to the topmost position. Such an aptitude to this mechanical mood has no access in Brahman. The sentiment of child Krishna removes that evil by breaking the cards. The cards. Okay. One day, shortly after Krishna's birth ceremony, when Mother Yashoda was patting her baby on her lap, kind of patting like that. The baby felt too heavy, and being unable to carry him, she unwillingly placed him on the ground. After a while, she became engaged in household affairs. At that time, one of the servants of Kamsa, known as Srinivasa, as instructed by Kamsa, appeared there in the shape of a whirlwind. You know whirlwind?
Mm-hmm.
He picked the child up on his shoulders and raised a great dust storm all over Vrindavan. Because of this, everyone's eyes became covered within a few moments. Sounds like me. And the whole area of Vrindavan became densely dark so that no one could see himself or anyone else. Ever see that sometimes when there's a storm coming in the afternoon? It's a bright sun, all the heavy clouds come in, months in time, you see that all of a sudden there's light, and light just seems all dark, all of a sudden, you know, light is really dim, almost like an eclipse. And because you see you have light in the room, and then it becomes very dark, and look out, so there's ominous clouds, big black clouds, and boom, boom. And that's it for the sun for that day, and the rain takes over, and that rest of the afternoon is rainy. It was like that, it was a huge cloud. And then ultimately death. During this great catastrophe, Mother Yashoda could not see her baby, who was taken away by the whirlwind, and she began to cry very piteously. She fell down on the ground exactly like a cow who had just lost her calf. And Mother Yashoda was so piteously crying, all the coward men and women immediately came and began to look for the baby, but they were disappointed and could not find him. Imagine Mother Yashoda must be really upset. You know, my God. baby hatha. That's everything, you know, for the mother, the rasa or yagal, the aspect of life and love and her very heart is her baby. The baby's not there. She's about to die and going crazy. Piteously crying. King of Asa demon, who took baby Krishna on his shoulder, went high in the sky, but the baby assumed such a weight that suddenly the demon could not go any further. He had to stop his whirlwind activity. Baby Krishna made himself heavy and began to weigh down the demon. The Lord caught hold of his neck. King of Asa felt his baby to be as heavy as a big mountain. Anuva Niyan Mahato Mahiyan, Krishna smaller than the smallest and heavier than the heaviest. So who can be heavier than Krishna? The word Guru means heavy. A Guru can also be very heavy if he carries Krishna in his heart. An example of that is, Prahlad Maharaj, when he was carrying the Lord in his heart, the demons, they wanted to pick him up and throw him off the cliff. And they went and said, he was just started meditating, but he was always sitting smiling, meditating on the Lord, Krishna Dhyan, remembering the Lord by meditating. Prahlad Maharaj. So they wanted to pick him up and throw him off the cliff to kill him under the order of Ramakrishna, Prahlad's father. And Prahlad just meditated on Lord Vishnu, who's a universal form and millions of planets that contain within his body. So Vishnu weighs so much, so all these big demons, the big rakshasas and demons, trying to pick this little boy up, little Prahlad is doing it. Meditating, they pick him up, they try to get under his legs, and three, four, and they can't pick him up, they couldn't move him, it was impossible to move him. So he was meditating on the heaviest of the heaviest of the heaviest, Lord Vishnu. So this king of Arjuna demon, he had that experience, a little tiny baby, 1 year old baby. How much did a 1 year old baby weigh? 15 kilos?
No,
10 kilos?
No.
And they weigh 6 when they're born. Come on, they weigh 6 kilos when they're born.
No.
They weigh 6 pounds.
Yeah.
No, get out. No, I weigh about 6 pounds when I turn.
No, that's good.
No, no, I don't know.
Yeah,
2 pounds is empty. Yeah, yeah, 3. 3 kg.
No.
Wait,
how much do I weigh?
Yeah, I mean, 700
then it
was
very
really
thick, then
maybe 1 kg.
And
then
it was really
strong.
And
1 kg?
Yeah. Really, it's
like really.
So then after a year, so after a year, they weigh
6 kg. Yeah.
So he was only 6 kg. But he was so much heavy. He was like heavier than the universe. So, he made himself so heavy he began to weigh down the demon. The Lord caught hold of his neck, crying. King of Arjuna felt the baby to be as heavy as a big mountain, and he tried to get out of his clutches, but he was unable to do so, and his eyes popped out of their sockets. Oh wow, Krishna. In other words, like if you squeeze something, it'll blow up, you know, like you take a balloon or something, you squeeze it here, and it goes out here, and it blows up. He's squeezing the neck, right? And Krishna's holding onto his neck and squeezing it. His eyes went. There's so much pressure on his neck, his eyes are. popped his eyes out of his socket. Eyes popped out. That's what exactly the word spelled. His eyes popped out from his socket. Pop. Crying very fiercely. Imagine your eyes popped out of your socket. Maybe you felt like that today when the holy was coming to your eyes. I felt like your eyes popped out. Crying very fiercely, he fell down to the ground of Vrindavan and died. And try to say he fell on the outskirts of Vrindavan. Because he was, demons aren't allowed to fall in Vrindavan. He's a particular character. The demons fell exactly like Tripurasura, who was pierced by the arrow of Lord Shiva. He hit the stone ground and his limbs were smashed. His body became visible to all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And the gopis saw the demon killed and found Krishna very happily playing on his body. They immediately picked up Krishna with great affection. The coward men and women became very happy to get back their beloved child Krishna. At that time they began to talk about how wonderful it was that the demon took away the child to devour him. They could not do so. Instead, he fell down dead. Some of them supported the situation. This is quite proper, because those who are too sinful die from their own sinful reactions, and child Krishna is pious. Therefore, he is saved from all kinds of fearful situations. And we, too, must have performed great sacrifices in our previous lives, worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, giving great wealth and charity, and acting philanthropically for the general welfare of men. Because of such pious activities, the child is saved from all danger. The gopis assembled there spoke among themselves. What sort of austerities and penances we must have undergone in our previous lives. We must have worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, offered different kinds of sacrifice, made charities, and performed many welfare activities for the public, such as growing banyan trees and excavating wells. As a result of these pious activities, we have gotten back our child, even though he was supposed to be dead. Now he has come back to enliven his relatives. After observing such wonderful happenings, Nanda Maharaj began to think of the words of Vasudeva again and again. After this incident, when Yashoda once was nursing her child and patting him with great affection, there streamed a profuse supply of milk from her breast, and when she opened the mouth of the child with her fingers, she suddenly saw the universal manifestation within his mouth. She saw within the mouth of Krishna the whole sky, including the luminaries, the stars in all directions, the sun, moon, fire, air, seas, islands,